Hey everybody, Greg Simpson here, Simpson, from punknews.org, Punk News Podcast producer, best Midwestern co-host, other stuff, Velour Underground Studios. Yeah, I'm here today, going to talk to Oliver Ackerman from the band A Place to Bury Strangers. A Place to Bury Strangers is one of the most creatively noisy post-punk bands out there. Goth-influenced baritone vocals recall the ghost of Ian Curtis, carried in by a wave of pummeling eardrum-scraping fuzz guitars, recalling the best of the best, gazing at their shoes bands, Jesus and Mary Chain, and My Bloody Valentine. So I met Oliver on Skype. Once again, I had interviewed him back in 2015 before A Place to Bury Strangers' last album, Transfixiation. And so I met him again to talk about their brand new Aural Assault, an album called Pinned on Dead Oceans. Before I connect here with Oliver, I want to play you a song off Pinned. This one is called Never Coming Back. Greg Simpson of punknews.org bringing you an audio, a podcast interview here with Oliver Ackerman from the band A Place to Bury Strangers. Now, Oliver, how's it going?
Good, man. How you doing?
I am great. And I talked to you, it looks like Transfixiation came out in 2015. Is that right? Your last album?
I think so.
Yeah, you don't even know when your own albums come out.
You know, what can you do? Time flies fast.
Yeah, it does, let me tell you. Okay, so Transfixiation was an amazing album, and not to just blow smoke or whatever, but I'm a huge fan of you guys, and became a fan partially through guitar-based, you know, guitar nerd-based stuff. Hearing about your pedal company, Death by Audio. So Death by Audio used to be a venue as well. And we talked about that last time, a venue in Brooklyn, and the venue, you closed down the venue. But the pedal company is still going strong. Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
So can you tell us a little bit about that? Like how much of your time is spent, between, you know, doing stuff for the band and running a business. I mean, you're essentially the owner of the business. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's, it's kind of like, it's a tough sort of juggling act, but I like love to work and love all the people that I'm working with. It's not just me at the pedal company. It's like, me and like a partner. And then we have about like 9 people who work here as well, kind of, constantly assembling and bouncing ideas back and forth and, working on all this stuff, because as the years go on, we keep on selling more and more pedals, and it's always kind of spiraling sort of out of control, but we're you know, always just kind of trying to do things sort of better and make cooler products and, you know, work with more musicians as much as possible to kind of get them to get the sounds and stuff that they want to get. And so the past couple years, it's been kind of I've been spending a lot more time on the pedal company, just because we kind of moved into this new space that we had to totally build up, and like the studio, we built a studio and stuff, and that kind of came together sort of quickly to record this record, as well as some of the other spaces. But then the pedal company kind of has like been having to go through a lot of changes and stuff, but it's been really good.
Okay. So, and it's still based in Brooklyn?
We actually just moved to Ridgewood, Queens. So.
Okay. All right. The new king of Queens right here.
Oliver Ackerman, everybody. Yeah.
So is the studio then also called Death by Audio?
I don't know. I think...
That branding, man. Gotta keep the branding.
Branding, I guess, with all that stuff. I kind of feel like the last studio was called Death by Audio. There was so much kind of involved in that. And then we moved into this place that was covered in mold that we called the Mold House.
Oh, that's not good.
That was terrible. We had to leave. We weren't there for very long because we had to leave really quick.
For health reasons.
Yeah, exactly. For health reasons. The sound was impeccable, though. But, and then, I don't know. Maybe it's like called the rat hole or something like that. There were like lots of rats here when we moved in and holes in the wall and stuff. But,
now I've been to New York, the New York City area, a couple of times, but isn't Queens more like suburban? You still got rats around there? I mean, there's rats everywhere, I suppose, if you let it go long enough.
Yeah, they pushed the rats out of the city into the suburbs, pretty much. So, it's kind of suburban. It's like a little bit more suburban than I would like, but like we have this like total industrial building, so it's pretty cool as far as that.
I bet the rent is, rent's probably cheaper, right?
It's cheaper, but there's definitely like reasons why. It's like where we're at is a total shithole, you know. So it's you know, in a building that nobody in their right mind would ever rent out. So
except for rock and rollers.
Except for us, yeah, exactly. So we still remember we can live on the streets or in a cardboard box or something. So we do what we can do.
Yeah. When I transitioned from being more of a drummer into a guitarist, I very quickly learned that my subpar playing, I would want to put some effects on my guitar to cover up the mistakes. Now, that is not the case for your guitar playing, but you do use a lot of crazy effects, and this is what drew me to the band in the first place. I know last time I talked to you, of course, I brought up Jesus and Mary Chain being one of my favorite bands of all time. And you guys are kind of carrying the torch as far as loud bands go, rather than just putting layers of thick, like low end heavy guitars. You guys really bring the treble a lot of the time. And on this album, I want to know if there are any new pedals you designed specifically for this album. Is there brand new stuff you've designed that we're hearing on this album?
There is. There's like this pedal that was kind of like essential to some of the bass sound on this record, where it was this pedal that we even came out with at Death by Audio. It's called Deep Animation. But like the prototypes for that was working on it. It kind of like just makes the bass guitar kind of move in this really interesting, like overdriven sort of way. So like the harder you hit it, the more it like changes the sound. So kind of adds this other dimension to it. And with this record in particular, like it was kind of, there's a lot of sort of like very simple, sort of almost repetitive kinds of parts where you're just sort of building intensity. And this, you know, this kind of effect just lets you sort of like, when you dig in, your sound really digs in and kind of expands and explodes. And that was some of this on this record. There was some other things that I've kind of developed, which they're definitely on the record. I don't know if it was that it was a necessity that I invent these things for the record.
I am inspired by sounds I can get out of my pedals. I mean, sometimes probably seems backwards to a lot of songwriters where, you know, you'll see some rock band and they're like, oh, I write my songs on the acoustic guitar. I do not write my songs on the acoustic guitar. I will be inspired by weird sounds I'm getting. So one sound in particular I wanted to bring up on the song Look Me in the Eye, which is a little later in the record. It almost sounds like a gritty version of like chiptune music. Are you familiar with what that is? Chiptune?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, where it's like the drums... And you have to tell me if it's a drum machine on this one or your new drummer, who we'll have to talk about soon. But it sounds almost like it's got that Bit Crusher kind of effect on it. And then the guitars come in this very kind of thin digital kind of fuzz. Intentionally thin, kind of fuzzy thing. Is that what's the trick there? I mean, I'm sure we've got some guitarists listening, hopefully, that would like to know.
I don't know if you ever heard that band, the Coneheads. Have you ever heard that?
Yeah.
But they like recorded all their stuff and like sped it up. This kind of just has some of that sound. This is an example of one of those songs where like, I really love some of the energy and the power of the demo. And then we re-recorded the song at like a slower speed. But then I kind of like took both of them and sort of combined them together. And so it involved like just speeding up some of like the tape track to kind of match in with what the demo was recorded on. So
very nice. You know, the Beatles did stuff like that.
There you go. Exactly.
Yeah. Famously, that little like harpsichord or organ or whatever that is on In My Life, the George Martin is maybe the one that played it at like half speed and then sped it up.
Yeah, totally. No, definitely. And so you get some of that sound where it's almost like superhuman playing, but you also then get these weird kind of artifacts of, like what you were talking about, chiptune stuff, where you kind of, you know, it's got this weird, like, synthetic, messed up kind of sound or something. Unplayed by a human or whatever, so.
Right. Yeah. That's super cool. So is that a drum machine on that one, or is it...
It's a combination of a real drummer and a drum machine, so.
Okay, yeah, tell us about your new drummer, because that is a pretty big... I wouldn't say it's a turning point, but something very unique about this record is your new drummer, for both her playing style as well as her vocals. So could you tell us about her?
Her name is Leah Simone Braswell, and she joined the band maybe like 2 years ago or something. When Robbie had left, we were kind of looking for some more drummers, and we had a couple other people, and then, you know, Dion had seen her at this show, and she was just a killer drummer. So we, you know, saw if she wanted to try out for the band, and she did, and it was just like, her drumming is just so great. It was just instantly like, wow, this sounds really, really cool and awesome. And then as it went on, we started being like, hey, do you want to like sing this part or try out these backing vocals or something? And you know, her voice is like so unique and so kind of crazy. It was just like, it just seemed to work so great and be so interesting with what we were doing, kind of in like a way where, you know, you got your preconceived ideas of maybe what kind of songs or something you would want to sing, or the styles of way things should be or something. And she kind of came from this place that was like completely unlike anything I'd ever imagined. So it was pretty awesome.
So yeah, I started listening to the album before I opened up the PDF of the press release, and so I heard a woman's voice. I'm like, oh, that's cool. You know, maybe a guest vocal or whatever. But then it kept reappearing. I opened up the press sheet. I'm like, oh, sure enough, they've got a new drummer, a woman, and she's singing now. And I thought that was awesome, especially because you are you have a very defined baritone. You typically sing in a very low range. So having a female singer, and she's maybe more of like an alto or something, she's not singing super high or aggressive, but it's a very good balance between you two. So having her as your new drummer, I would imagine, and having her vocal abilities there as well, those two things probably helped inspire a lot of new songs on the record. Is there anything in particular on the record where maybe you started writing it by yourself, or you wrote it as a group and her new contributions played a big part in the writing process?
Definitely. I think, you know, we kind of only like touched the surface on a lot of that stuff because she was kind of sort of, you know, finding her way in this band and how she kind of fit in with the project. But there's actually even like a bonus record that has come with, like, if you get like the deluxe edition of the record, and it has like all of these.
Oh, damn it.
Sorry, dude. Yeah. It's like all of these different like jams and performances that we played at places, whether it be like our practice space or kind of on tour throughout the world. And it's got like some of these songs that we wrote on the spot, which is really kind of in even a whole nother step of a direction, which I kind of feel like the band will maybe be going more in the future. And you kind of see like just her sort of full range and stuff, I think, like that, at least a lot more. And, you know, but she definitely crafted a bunch of these songs, you know, to take them to the next level of what we're doing, whether it be like kind of going back and forth, like on There's Only One of Us, you know, her like writing her lyrics and kind of coming up with those things, I think takes the song to someplace completely different. Like, and some of those other songs as well, too. Like, there's demos that I had recorded where it's like, it almost kind of is this whole other different sort of like monotone crooning kind of thing. And then it kind of turns into like a party song or something like that. And
yeah, yeah.
It's really cool. I mean, she's also just like really into everything that we're doing and just loves like playing music and doing the stuff. So it's even just like the energy and the excitement of this band, I think, has kind of like stepped up. Not that we weren't excited before, but it's just always thrilling to be like working with people who are just like extremely thrilled to be doing what they're doing. So it's been good.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. My, one of my bands just added a couple of new members, to flesh out our live stuff. And it is really like, it even just juices up the old songs too.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. And so actually you mentioned the song There's Only One of Us. I had made a note about that one as well. Last time I talked to you, I even mentioned how I was sometimes confused about certain songs being real drums or drum machine, because typically, and you've had a couple of past drummers, but typically the style has been so just pounding and kind of a steady dynamic feel, to where I was uncertain. And I'm a drummer. I'm like, man, it's either like the most consistent heavy hitting drummer ever, or it's a drum machine. Whereas your new drummer, she is, I mean, it's more almost like a more human kind of natural feel with the dynamics.
Totally.
And not that I didn't like the old pounding, you know, in the face drums, and she can do that too. But on There's Only One of Us, there's this very distinct pattern, but you can tell it's not a programmed pattern on a drum machine because of the dynamics and the accents. And so I think that is a really cool element to mix it up on this being your fifth album.
Yeah, I think so, for sure. I mean, yeah. She's like just like really incredible at drumming, and has been drumming like most, I think, for years and years, and played in a lot of bands, and really just is so intensely talented. It's like really cool because like even on, I think, you know, all those songs, a lot of them we did multiple takes and stuff like that. And, you know, she just never messed up and would always come up with like really cool energy, and, you know, just is an incredible drummer. I don't know if I've ever played with anyone who is like so on point and with such like even cool style and expression and everything that is really cool.
Yeah. I think expression. Yeah. Expressiveness is definitely a good word for it. Where, you know, she can get really intense and in your face, but can also pull back. It's expressive. That's exactly the word. Was there also a different, I'd say as far as the production and the recording style, now you mentioned you're in a new studio, but as far as some stylistic choices, it seems like maybe you made some different choices on this record than on Transfixiation or some of the other ones. I mean, maybe not everyone knows about compression or what compression does in records, but were you maybe easing off of that kind of thing on her drums, whereas maybe in the past you were kind of squashing them down to make them more powerful? Was there any change in the recording process for the drums with her drumming?
Yeah, definitely. It's like, I mean, some of the times you just kind of almost even have to do that in ways to sort of get something to kind of have that sort of sound. And there's something to do with even like the finesse of way things are played. It's like some people can just kind of, you know, sort of make those things work out where it's like even soft hits and things can sound much more intentional and even, you know, get to have this powerful sound without actually having to affect it. You know, it's kind of even what you were talking about before about using guitar effects to mask the sound of your guitar to make it sound better. I mean, I do that stuff too, but I feel like, you know, we didn't really have to do that so much on this record because it was like initially the sounds and everything kind of already were carefully placed and carefully thought about and where it had the kind of intensity and the feel of what we were sort of going for without having to kind of like do any fancy recording techniques.
Cool.
Yeah, a lot of this record was even done with, you know, a lot more things kind of stripped back and a lot more minimal of a sense. We recorded part of it like at a friend's studio where we basically just went there and set up and played live for 2 days. And then a lot of the rest of it was done kind of as we're building our studio in a construction site. So we didn't even have much of the equipment set up or anything. And so it was just kind of, you know, sort of doing what we could possibly do while we're kind of like stretching the rest of our lives kind of thin and trying to make this stuff work and, you know, also work on these things and, you know, get Leah acclimated with what the band is and everything and planning tours and everything. And so it kind of just came about in a way as a really natural sort of, you know, we're kind of constantly, as we're doing these other things, working on this record over time, but also nothing that we like maybe spent forever crafting, but I think kind of captures like a cool transition and moment in this band.
Yeah, for sure. It definitely seems the least worked over, I guess.
Totally.
So kind of like the way you were saying it, like, you know, and I can definitely feel that, you know, since I've actually, since last time we talked, I opened my own studio. I also work at Sonic Iguana, the pretty famous punk studio that's been going since the 90s. And since I've opened my own studio, now I'm recording my own band stuff, my two bands, and going, you know, you go over and over it and you can try it again. You know, it's not costing you any studio hour money, so you keep going over and over it.
Yeah.
But the way you guys did it this time, having some kind of restrictions, lots of times restricting yourself, keeping yourself from thinking too much about it is sometimes better.
I think so. And a lot of times, like, you kind of, it's good to do a little bit of both maybe. And there's something to be said about something that's really well crafted and really awesomely polished. But sometimes you just like kill the vibe. And, you know, I'll often like go back and listen to old things that I've done and everything. And, you know, every once in a while we've done that in the past where it's like the demo or what had been recorded originally was like so interesting. And then you spend so much time trying to almost like recraft something that you kind of, you know, lose some of that excitement and energy when you were kind of almost even, you know, when you're writing the demo, you're kind of knowing exactly what the song is about in a ways. And then sometimes when you're later, you're like, you're kind of just sort of playing it as a cover band of what that original moment was or something.
That's interesting. Yeah, you kind of lose the plot a little bit maybe, right? Or the energy.
Sometimes you discover something new and fantastic and whatnot. And, you know, you just got to kind of figure out what you can do and what actually sounds the best and be like not afraid to just kind of go with your gut.
Yeah, yeah. So another song, one song that kind of stuck out to me, that's definitely a different kind of turn for you guys was the song Was It Electric? And I'd say this one, like, if I put on one of your records, most people would not say, oh, this band is makes pretty music. You know, it's like not the kind of thing you're going for, really.
Yeah.
But this song, Was It Electric? It's probably your prettiest song yet. Like, the guitars are more twinkly. The drums, while they're propulsive, they're not really overwhelming. You and Leah sing kind of like an octave apart for the majority of the song. What kind of sparked this song? Was this something that Leah brought to the table as an idea, or what kind of brought this turn as far as I'm going to call it, yeah, your prettiest song.
Sure, that's all right. really kind of came about with this guitar part where the kind of the song is sort of based around, which is this sort of like rolling guitar part. And it's just one of those parts that I was like, oh, this is really cool. And we kind of sort of crafted it and turned it into a song. And we'll always write a lot of songs that never ever end up like seeing the light of day. And maybe it's because we kind of can't make that sort of thing happen. And I think just like Leah's style and playing and how like she even kind of took to this song really turned it into a song that kind of like works and is sort of successful. Because otherwise I feel like maybe everyone just, you know, we might have like lost interest or something, or, you know, you get a bunch of, you know, dudes with a bunch of testosterone pumping together and everybody wants to just slam their guitar on the ground or something. You know, I think that, you know, it definitely like there's a little bit of a more of an outlet for some of these kind of like prettier sort of melodies and things, potentially at least. And I think that it's just like, you know, Leah comes from like such a different background and stuff. So just kind of embraced some of that stuff more and kind of, you know, you always just kind of want to do different things. And we all kind of recognize that like this is like a really pretty sound. Then, you know, you kind of, you just go for it.
Definitely cool to hear, and a lot of songs on the record are definitely standing out amongst your catalog, which I've loved all of it, but it's cool to hear these new things being tried, because a lot of bands, when they get past their third, fourth record, you could tell they're kind of struggling to come up with something new. I mean, either bands kind of settle into their little formula and people still like it, or they don't. Or they try something really bizarre, like all these bands that go like, oh, we're like a synth band now, which I like that stuff, but it's like such a crazy turn that it like splits their fan base. You guys, I think, definitely did the right thing by, you know, keeping the old stuff that really worked and what has defined your sound, while also sprinkling in enough of these new elements to keep someone, you know, a longtime fan like me, you know, keep me on my toes. And I guess the other big thing, I mean, this would be the last big question I suppose I have for you, is that this is the first album that has come out from you in the Trump presidency.
Sure.
And I remember, you know, when he got elected, you know, most of my friends on social media and stuff are pretty liberal. And a lot of them are rock and rollers, and everyone's like, well, on the bright side, we're going to have a lot of cool punk albums come out or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, yeah, you know, maybe. And there have been some really good ones. Superchunk just put out a record that is their most political in years, and it's really good. Now, what on this album, I'm sure there's got to be some stuff, some the more angry parts of this album that were inspired by that. Would that be correct?
Yeah, sure, definitely. I mean, that stuff kind of just, you can't help it, but you kind of feel those things. I mean, we actually had band practice when the results for the election were coming back, and I remember it being,
yeah,
like, everyone's super excited, and we're having such a good practice, and it was like a four-hour practice, and it just got so depressing by the end of it. Like, I was so sad and leaving, and I took, like, a car from the space and shared the car with, like, at different times, it was, like, one of those, like, you know, Uber where they pick up other people, and it was, picked up first, like, there was one girl who was in there crying, then we picked up some other girl who was crying, and then some other girl who was crying. It was, like, such a sad, like, just intense moment of just sadness. Which, you know, of course, that's, you know, a terrible thing. And so, yeah, there's definitely those moments on this record. I mean, there's, like, even there's only one of us, like, I know Leah's lyrical parts are kind of have somewhat of a reflection upon that kind of stuff. There's some of those kind of moments that, you know, even some of these songs that we'll write about, you know, like Situations Changes or something where, you know, or even Never Coming Back, like it might not even been about Trump in particular, but you have these fantasies in your head about what it's like when, you know, people are kind of doing terrible things in power or idiots or someone, you know, kind of like abusing you or taking advantage of you from remembering times and from school and all this stuff. And, you know, then it all kind of makes complete sense and becomes a reality in some ways. But so there's definitely those moments in this album. And, you know, I don't know if, you know, some of these things, like we kind of go to some of those places even anyways when you're feeling those things. But, you know, now you can exactly feel those things for real and have a lot of kind of, you know, things which kind of make sense when you're sort of creating this kind of music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's, I think, one of my favorite things about this album is I'm talking about how it's, you know, it's very eclectic in that you've got the really noisy stuff you guys are known for, and you've got these angrier songs, you know, that could be, like you said, partially inspired by the political landscape today. But then you've got some of the prettiest moments that you guys have ever created. And I think that's really the strongest point about this album, Pinned. And Pinned comes out, and this is on Dead Oceans, which is based in my old hometown of Bloomington, Indiana. And it comes out on April 13th, which, as we're recording this, is in just a couple days. So you're pretty excited for the masses to hear it?
For sure.
Yeah. All right. Anything else you want to tell our listeners before we sign off?
Stay punk.
Stay punk, for sure. All right. Thanks a lot, Oliver.
Thank you so much.
It was nice to talk to you again.
Yeah, good to talk to you again, too.